Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time!
The best there is, best there was, and the best there ever will be! And you know it.
With a tear in my eye.
The queen of the crop.
Acknowledge me.
Good morning, everybody. Episode 356 of Top Rope Nation here to discuss WWE Bash in Berlin. We got all of us on the line today. The trio is back together. Jesse Velasquez, Justin Joint, and myself, Ryan Drosty. Jesse, how are you doing this morning, man? We missed you on the last pod.
I always have fear of missing out during AEW events, especially. So I was like, oh, man. I'm like, well, hopefully we'll get one in before Classics here on Tuesday night. So, yeah, I'm in a much better mood, and it's supposed to be a gorgeous day here in Minnesota. So get outside after this and mosey on with the day.
Cooling down a little bit. At least here it is, which is nice. Finally, get some fall weather going, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. It's supposed to be, I think, like 74 today. I think I'm going to go to the state fair tomorrow for a couple of hours. I have not gone yet this year.
Okay, nice. Got anything in the glass this morning? You got a cup of Joe or anything like that?
Always do. You have to be on brand every single time for this occasion. Yep, we got the mug as always.
Oh, yeah.
Top Rope Nation Unplugged.
Nice. Well, welcome back. Yeah, we missed you on the All-In show. That was a fun one. Justin, you were here with me, my man. How's it going? The pacifist baby face, as your name tag says this morning.
Love it.
Yeah, I think we'll get into that a little bit. Doing pretty good here. Feeling a lot better than last time we potted. Thank you, everybody, who wished me well on my quote-unquote recovery from a little bit of illness. Not 100%, but feeling a lot closer than I was. Not in the greatest of moods this morning. The kids have been a little bit of a headache. We had a blowout situation for any of those out there who are still dealing with diapers. And I just got done watching, speaking of blowouts, I just got done watching Tottenham shit the bed. So hopefully I don't drag this attitude too much into the pot today.
Well, to brighten your mood, you know, NFL starts this week, and I think your 49ers are going to be pretty good again this year. So you have that to look forward to.
As long as nobody else gets shot.
Oh, my God. I did just see that this morning. I mean, that's insane, man. First-round draft pick?
Yep.
Oh, my God. My God. Well, do you have any coffee? I know you're a coffee drinker. Anything in the glass?
Well, I've been up for a while, so I already had almost an entire pot of coffee, so I'm just having a little 7-Up right now. Settle the stomach.
Yeah.
Was he supposed to be your number three receiver?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with how he was doing in camp.
Yeah. Which, for the record, anybody interested, I believe he is in stable condition.
Yes. Speedy recovery.
I saw the video of him kind of walking off gingerly. Yeah. Well, hopefully he gets healthy, but I mean, you got plenty of talent on offense, so I think they'll be able to carry the load. You guys should be pretty good. So, yes, indeed. Looking forward to NFL starting this week, as I said. Looking forward to chatting with all of you. We got John Hope in the chat here. If you guys are joining us live, please hit us with your grade for Bash in Berlin. We're going to be talking about our own grades here momentarily. I want to throw just a special shout out to our patrons, as we always do. You see the names scrolling across the bottom. Thank you guys, as always, for being our producers, essentially, and making this podcast possible. Patrons have got some great bonus content this month. They got a new Unplugged last week. They got an extra yesterday from me with instant reaction to Bash in Berlin. This Tuesday night, we got classics coming up, SummerSlam 94. Never been a better time to join the Patreon page. Check it out. Link here in the broadcast description. All right, let's do it. A through F, what is your grade for Bash in Berlin, Jesse Velasquez? I'll go to you first.
I'm going to change my SummerSlam grade first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to downgrade that to a C. Only reason I'm going to do that is because I felt this show was better. It was definitely tighter. And I'm going to go with, and this was very, very difficult. I was passing back and forth between the lowest of the possible B's and the highest of the possible C's. There goes my camera. That is not good.
Keep going, and then you can
Definitely keep going, and then I'm going to go, as of now, with a C+. Kind of very similar to what John is saying in the chats. Great crowd, for sure. I love the opener. I thought that was fantastic. And then everything else on the card was either good to, I'd say very good. There was one match that I liked. It didn't live up to expectations, but I did feel that it was very good. I guess the last thing I'll add is very predictable, for sure. I mean, I think we all got the five winners correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, that was certainly no problem. Justin, your grade.
Yeah, I would say John in the comments and Jesse kind of summed up my feelings on it. There was nothing really offensive on this show and honestly, nothing really bad on it. Great crowd. But it was, just the epitome of average for me from top to bottom. There is nothing I will ever go back to watch on this card again. But I also, at the end of it, didn't feel like it was a total waste of time. So C+.
Yeah, I think C+ for me too. I kind of toyed with the B- to Carl's point here. I in the moment I gave it a C+, and then I, you know, with my general criteria for these, for the B level, was there anything I would go back and watch? And I did go back and watch the mixed tag again, which I thought was pretty fun. And I honestly, when my kids wanted to watch it, I was like, all right, I'll watch it again. And so I didn't mind sitting through that one a second time. So almost had the like go back and watch thing. But, you know, there's an asterisk with that because it was because my kids asked me to. Under my own power, I probably wouldn't. So I think I'll stay at a C+. I mean, it was certainly, if you look at last weekend, it was not better than All In. I think what I will say about the two is this show was, only five matches. Consistency level, like they were mostly all like three-ish star matches with some a little bit higher, whereas All In did have a couple of matches that like kind of bottomed out in like right around two stars to me. But then they also had a five-star match of the year contender, another four-plus star match, and so like this was probably more consistent, but it was super short, so that's easy to do when you only have five matches versus nine. So, I mean, All In definitely was the better show. I agree with Jesse. I think that this was a better show than SummerSlam. I'd rather, if I had to watch one back, I would rather watch this one than SummerSlam. Would you agree with that, Justin?
I would. And that's even taken into account for me coming into this show, where two of the matches had stipulations that, like, I didn't realize the full extent of the stipulations. Like, I was excited for a strap match with Drew and Punk. And then it was like, oh, it's a four corners strap match. Okay. Well, that's not near as fun, being that I think I've seen one that I like in my life, and that was Sting and Vader at Super Brawl 3. And then, you know, I mean, this is WWE, so I shouldn't have gotten my hopes up, but the intergender match, you know, being that a big part of the feud is Rhea and Dominic, I was kind of hoping there'd be a little bit more of the intergender aspect to it, but no, it's one of those where if the guy tags out, then the other guy has to tag out too. So two kind of deflating additives to these stipulation matches.
You've seen three Justin strap matches that are worth your while then.
Corner variety?
Oh, no. You've seen one. You nitpicked me on this one. Steve Austin, Savio Vega.
Oh, okay. Touche. Good call, my friend.
Yeah, I was fascinated by that one. No, I think you said Sting Vader. That was a four corners one?
Yes.
That's what I thought. Okay. And then Danielson Starks, of course, wasn't.
We can start there. Before we do, we'll start talking on that match. It'll be our first one. I wanted a really quick show where the Twitter poll was on the grading. And most people voted B. So not as high, again, as All In. 41% at the B, 34% at the A, 18% C, 7% D or F. That's out of 100 votes as of the poll I put up yesterday. So, yeah, I'm more on the C+ level. I can understand people giving it a B, though. A, I can't imagine giving the show an A, but to each their own. Yeah, let's talk about the strap match because, I mean, I think going in, that was the one I was most anticipating. I thought that their SummerSlam match did not live up to expectations. We were very kind of vocal on that on the show over the last couple of weeks. And so I felt like this one needed to. And as far as like the four corners things go, it's kind of weird because like I've seen some matches that have that or you can win by pinfall or submission. I think it's weird when you can't win that way. You know, like you think about the old... it's kind of like akin to the cage matches WWE used to do, which we'll talk about on Tuesday night with Bret and Owen, where like the only way to win was escape. You couldn't pin to win. You couldn't get the submission to win. I never really understood that. It's like, it's kind of odd to me. It takes away from the violence a little bit, I feel like. And yeah. I also didn't like the lights. It was like, to me, that was one of those WWE isms that was, they're trying to ramp up production too much, get a little bit too cutesy with it. Totally unnecessary. You know, they're making the point on commentary of where, you know, you have to hit them all in sequence, and if you lose the momentum, it wipes it all out. And it's like, dude, if you have to hit them all in sequence, I don't need a light to remind me which corners have been hit, because after like 30 seconds it's going to be over anyways. And it seemed to get awkward right away when Michael Cole was on commentary practically yelling at the referee saying, hey, get those lights off. The momentum's over, kind of thing. It's just a distraction. It was like both matches they've had so far had a kind of an unnecessary distraction. Seth Rollins. And then, people might think it's silly me saying it's a distraction. It just bugged me just presentation wise. I don't need these four light poles in the corner. It's just kind of lame, I thought.
That I don't think they were really bright enough to indicate visually to everybody what was going on. I mean, they were pretty dim for the most part. And to your point, like we're in this middle, in the middle of a blood feud in this match that should be pretty violent. But with this kind of stipulation, it's like they have to stop the momentum of the match in order to try and go to this finish where they have to keep hitting each corner. Just kind of takes away from what should just be a violent match. I.e. see Danielson and Starks from a year ago.
Yeah, those extra bells and whistles that WWE's been adding over the course of the last two decades take away from a lot of the matches. So, I mean, seriously, if you took those away, this would be a very good strap match. Because there was a lot of physicality in there. I mean, there was a couple little hokey moments, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But I enjoyed the match for what it was. Just didn't quite live up to the expectations, as Ryan mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I wonder how much input Punk had in setting up this match, because it's very, very interesting. I said this on the BR show last night, that he did the strap match exactly a year after the strap match he was supposed to be in, last year with Ricky Starks at All Out. And it's like, all right, here we are, almost a year to the day from when he was supposed to be in one. And then he got fired, and then Brian stepped in. And of course, I think we all think greatest strap match of all time, probably with Ricky Starks and Brian last year. This was nowhere close to that. I mean, if you look at the pictures of the two and you see the blood and the intensity that, you know, that awesome finish, Brian using the strap to wrench back on him and the cross face and everything. Incredible. That's what I want out of a strap match. This was, we got some blood. I think it was real blood. Because he didn't juice that much. I think it was hard way.
Yeah, I tried to rewind it to catch when it happened, but couldn't quite figure it out myself.
Because if he would have actually sliced himself, there would have been a lot more blood than that, unless he just really did it poorly. So I think that was legit. But yeah, I mean, it was fine. It was better than the SummerSlam match. You still got the hokiness, as Jesse mentioned, you know, the bracelet thing. The Punk in the end, he's delivering go to sleep. He's going to the corners. Another go to sleep. Another one, and then eventually they zoom in, you know, and he takes the friendship bracelet off, and come on.
I can tell you one thing. If I'm Punk and I'm helping set up this match, one spot I don't want is where the dude who has been physically active for 10 to 15 minutes takes the bracelet out of his groin area, and then when I put it on, I'm going to kiss it with my mouth. That's not something I would want to do.
So gross. Oh, great callback.
But, you know, the kinky guy.
The same thing with, you know, the four corner stipulation is as soon as the bracelet was introduced, it kind of took the wind out of the sails for the match to me. It's like they'd get all this momentum and then either via the four corner stipulation or the dumb bracelet, they would just two steps back, you know?
Yeah. Jesse, any other thoughts?
No, I 100% agree with every point that Justin has made. He said so close to being in pretty close to excellent territory, I felt.
Are we surprised at all as to how definitive of a victory it felt for Punk, considering where we think it's going to go?
Yes, that was my next point, because there's not really an out here. I mean, cleanly beat him, right? Like what is the argument for McIntyre other than I've beat you once before, so we won't have a rubber match? But there wasn't really, like, CM Punk pretty much won clean.
But what if Drew breaks the bracelet and all the beads spill all over the ring, man? Oh, man.
That would have been hilarious if that actually just happened at some point. On accident. Oh, that would have been great.
You just gave WWE Creative an idea.
There we go. Sorry, everybody.
Are you guys listening? I know there's at least one or two members of Creative that used to listen to this podcast. There you go. There's your idea. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do think they're going to have the rubber match at Bad Blood, which, you know, you talk about predictability. It's pretty clearly, I think that's the direction they're going. Yeah. Ever since they announced it, I think every wrestling podcast on earth was saying, oh, yeah, it's going to be Punk and Drew in a Hell in a Cell match, you know, and it would seem to be that that's where we're going, Jesse.
It is, even though I know I think there was an interview online where Punk says, yep, this thing's over. I'm moving on to the World Heavyweight Championship. And I think he said it even before the Gunther Orton match as well. So, nope, I think Drew's going to find a way to interject himself somewhere.
Yeah. I wouldn't be stunned if they make that match for the number one contendership, you know, kind of like the first Hell in a Cell at Bad Blood back in 97.
Perfect.
It's a good idea. Yeah.
So give it a little extra stakes, you know? So, yeah, I mean, overall, better than SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. Did it live up to the hype? I would say no. I think my hopes for this were higher, but I did think it was better than their last one. What do you guys think? Did it live up to your hype, Justin?
I mean, I wasn't overly hyped for it to begin with. So, I, you know, if it didn't reach my expectations, it fell just short.
Yeah.
I would say it was a step below. I think it's very similar to SummerSlam, where we had the expectations as well, and there were glimpses of it, and then it was just taken away by the bracelet and some other, and Seth Rollins was the first match.
Yeah. Couple thoughts from some of our patrons in the chat here. John says, Punk wanted that strap match he missed last year, and it did not compare to Danielson's. Agree, John. And then Carl checking in. The logistics of the stipulation, four corners, and the production with the lights did this match no favors in its role as the middle chapter. They need to knock it out of the park at Hell in a Cell. Yeah, it's really interesting with this feud because the mic work has been really good throughout, mostly on Drew's side, I got to say. I don't want to keep going after Punk, But this has just not been a traditional punk feud in the way of a friendship bracelet being the basis for his anger ever since he came back. You know, first it was that, you know, Drew injured him and everything, and that was all in good. But then they pivot to this friendship bracelet thing for the last couple of months. And it's just, that's not my cup of tea for a CM Punk feud. So, yeah, overall, though, like the out of the ring build has been really good for the most part until that. And the matches themselves, just maybe it's because the expectations have been high, but they haven't really delivered. And I mean, Drew has been doing great work the last couple of years. Punk can still go here and there. So, I mean, they got to come through at Bad Blood. Go ahead.
In this down as we have been on Punk, especially obviously since he came to the WWE, he still has that aura, man. When he came out, it still felt like a big match. And a lot of that is just due to, you know, like I said, Punk's aura.
Yeah.
Two things quick on Punk. One, he kind of wore the all-in gear from last year. I think his tights were just a smidge different, if I saw correctly. And then I think we know he's hitting a new low WWE-wise when he's referring to himself in a promo as WWE's version of Taylor Swift.
Jesus.
That was bad.
That's bad. Woof.
I will say the sharpshooter spot in the match looked pretty good.
Yeah.
He had a good sharpshooter on. I mean, of course, big Bret Hart fan, so I would expect nothing less from Punk. You know, other guys do the sharpshooter or girls, and we cringe sometimes. But that was a nice spot, I thought. I mean, it had some good spots throughout, but yeah, it was... I think I gave this one 3.5 in my ratings on Patreon, which was, you know, that's a little above average for me. It's not like a 4+ star match, but yeah, that's where that came in.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water. Enjoy. And watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy. but being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Now, I thought the best match of the night was the opener, and I wasn't really that surprised to see it open because you pretty much had to put Gunther in the main event. So they open with Cody and Kevin Owens. And if you guys didn't see SmackDown, they kind of added a new wrinkle to the match where Owens was talking about how Cody was injured and he had this knee injury suffered on the house show loop over there in Europe. And he called back on SmackDown to, like, even the way Cody made his entrance that night. And he was like, hey, you didn't get down on your knees during the entrance like you do usually, or you didn't bend down to one knee. There's something wrong with you. You know, should you be having this match with me? You know, being a good friend that he is and all of that. And, you know, the match was really good. They didn't really hit the knee thing until late when Cody went up to the top rope and he was going to go for the kick. And then he kind of like crumbled to the mat. But yeah, they had a really, really solid match. Jesse, I know you liked the match. Give me your thoughts.
Yep. And then a little bit of confliction with KO on the outside and even yelling at Wade Barrett, who he could hear on commentary. He's just saying, lay off, buddy. You don't need to tell me what to do. I mean, he did go after his knee, but he just, with the confliction with the apron bomb and then throwing him in the ring, hitting a stunner. I mean, I think these two have really good chemistry. And if I recall right, I think they showed that Cody has beaten KO in one other match televised wise. There's definitely room for another match, and it's just going to be a question of whether KO is going to draw it out of him or if Cody's just going to say, you earned my respect and I feel I should give you a rematch.
Yeah, no, I was kind of waiting to see if they do a turn at the end, you know, when they were shaking and holding up each other's hands and stuff, but they held off for now. Justin, thoughts on the opener?
A good match that for me personally was hurt just because I don't think there was much question as to the outcome and the fact that I am, you know, I defended the whole Tiger Driver stuff with Will Ospreay. Which it turned out to just be, you know, fine, a nice little wrinkle to the story they were telling. But then when you add that with Toni Storm at All In, all another baby face refusing to do what it takes to win. And then you add on to that Kevin Owens being a baby face who will not do what it takes to win, even though the entire history of his WWE career would say this is exactly the person who would take advantage of that kind of situation. That hurt the match for me quite a bit. I am just really over these pacifist baby faces who don't seem to realize the career that they're in, which is professional wrestling and trying to hurt your opponent in order to win. But yeah, the most stunning thing for me, it's been 8 years since Kevin Owens has had a singles title in WWE. Holy shit. I should know by now, but I am just not a fan of this slow march of time that is just, you know, stomping on all of us.
Almost to the day.
Go to AEW, Kevin Steen. Yeah,
oh my God, please. Yeah. Please. He has done all. I mean, look at it this way. We talk about the Jake Roberts 7-year rule. I mean, his title drought alone is worthy of the Jake Roberts rule. So yes. Make wrestling a little bit more interesting and jump to the competitor.
Great point. Yeah. Go ahead, Jesse.
Oh, I was going to look it up. I think it's been pretty close to 8 years to the day since he won that championship on Raw in that four-way.
And do you guys remember on the pod, I used to always make the joke for years that he was the greatest universal champion of all time because all the other reigns were so forgettable. You know, Finn one night, the Goldberg thing. It was really until Roman got it. It was like, yeah, Kevin Owens is the best universal champion of all time, legitimately. But yeah, it was so long ago. I even remember, that's wild, because that would have been right when we started the podcast. Because I remember one of our early shows, in fact, I cut the audio in of him winning the title in our intro. That was probably like within our first 5 podcasts that we had done.
August 29th, 2016. So yeah.
Oh, wow.
8 years and a couple days.
I mean, He's always great. We've been all been big fans of Kevin. It's just there's really nothing left for him to do here. He needs something fresh. And yeah, you couldn't possibly buy him winning the title. I tried to I was watching this with my kids, you know, first match. They both, my two older ones, they both love Cody, of course. Unfortunately, failure as a parent. But but they're just cheering and cheering and cheering. So I love to be the, you know, the counter side to that. I'm like, no, Kevin Owens is going to win. So I tried to get lost in the moment. I was, every time Kevin would cover, I'm throwing up my hands in the air like 1, 2, 3. Oh no. And it was pretty fun, you know, with the kids doing that, even though I knew the result was never in.
So
of course,
are you just going to buy one that they have to share? Or are you going to buy each of your girls their own Cody Rhodes robe that they are now selling on WWE shop?
$400. Unbelievable. I think it'll be so big they could use it as a sleeping bag. My God. No, I will not be purchasing one of those. But yeah, no, I do think they'll probably have a rematch. I mean, because let's face it, they just don't have anything for Cody. They continue to have nothing, nobody for him to feud with, you know. So I do think that there's going to be a turn. Owens will go dark, you know, to justify having another match. That's probably where we're going. Go ahead, Jesse.
Is that going to get repetitive? Because I could totally see Randy Orton doing that here in the next month or two as well, because the lack of contenders that there is right now.
Yeah, I mean, they probably both will. Need it character-wise, freshen them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Orton in particular.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that. But yeah, U.S. title run in 2017, his last singles run. They kept mixing up the number of years between 7 and 8, Carl says on commentary. And he's also agreeing with us that Kevin Owens is a perfect candidate for AEW. Something fresh. I mean, I know they'll probably pay him well. Well, hopefully pay him well. I don't know. These contract discussions going on this week are a little crazy from the fan base. We'll probably make him a decent offer, but I mean, should we talk about that real quick? Who are these idiots on social media defending WWE? Oh, how could they pay Swerve that much? WWE should. Yeah, okay, they're right. What? Don't you want people to get paid? If you guys didn't see, the story was out there that, oh, WWE, according to Dave Meltzer at least, were shocked at how much AEW offered Swerve Strickland to re-sign. And it was above and beyond what they thought the market was for this guy. Well, you know what? I don't really care. I want him to get paid. I don't know why people are all over the map on this, Jesse.
Oh, I think we know what the root of it is.
maybe.
Look at the markets in every professional sport that's making so much money. I can't believe Steph Curry just got a $62.6 million 1-year extension. And if I'm trying to remember, like I'm not following the salaries like I was years ago, but if they used to be in the 35s and the 40s. This is nuts. So they're making so much money. I would say WWE is especially. I'm assuming AEW is making enough because Tony keeps handing these people contracts. Got to pay them what they're worth. We've been saying for years as well that the WWE, and now that they're under the TKO umbrella, the TKO umbrella with UFC, they've been underpaying their fighters for years. If you look at the salary as opposed to the revenue that they're making, it's always the lowest in the entertainment in the sports business.
Yeah. Look, Swerve Strickland is a cornerstone piece for this company who earned his way to the top. He's a guy that WWE completely dropped the ball with. And he kept his head down, nose to the grindstone, kept working. He's one of the guys that does local media all the time. You know, he worked his way all the way up to the top. He deserves to get paid. And so, you know, I don't really care what WWE thinks he's worth. If AEW is going to pay him big money, as they should, to keep one of their cornerstone pieces for the future around, they should. The guy's 33 years old. He can be one of their top guys for many years to come. So, yeah, I just thought that dialogue was very strange, very strange. And to the point, WWE will probably make a strong offer for Kevin. He's been there for a long time at this point in time. But I assume AEW will make something somewhat comparable. The guy's got to be a multimillionaire if he's been smart with his money, which I'm sure he has been. He's got a family. And just creatively, there's just so much. And he's friends with the guys over there, too, from the indie days. There's so much more for him to do, which I would think would be fulfilling to him creatively as a professional versus spinning his tires to the point in the chat and doing the same thing moving forward over and over and over. So, you know, we'll see. It's just wild to the point of how fast time marches on. I mean, it feels like we were just talking about him re-signing with WWE on this podcast, and we were stunned at the time. Everyone thought he was going to leave, and then he re-signed, and we came on the show, and we were like, well, good for him. You know, he got paid. All right, now I think it's time to move on. We'll see, though. Yeah. Let's move on. So rest of the card, real quickly here. Let's go to the mixed tag next. Actually, no, let's real quick. The women's tag team titles. This shouldn't take long. This was my only prediction where I was like, okay, I could see it going either way, but I pretty firmly felt like Cargill and Belair should win the titles back. You know, it was when they did the title change at Clash at the Castle with Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. I'm like, all right, I get it. I understand why they did it. But now I think it's time to go back to, you know, two possible, one definite main eventer, another person who potentially could be there someday, and them using this tag title run to eventually set up a feud between them. And so, I mean, I was happy to see Belair and Jade get the titles back. I can't remember what match it was, but they had recently had a match that I commented on one of these podcasts about how it was very odd how they did the heat segment where Cargill was getting worked over in the ring and Belair made the hot tag. And I thought that was so opposite of how this should work because Cargill's the muscle, you know, and they did it opposite in this match where Bianca got beat down and they were getting the heat from the crowd. And then she made the hot tag to Jade. That's the way it should clearly work. It was much better match layout. They end up getting the win. Correct story. And I think the bigger question is how long should they hold the tag team titles? So, Jesse, what do you think on this one? You know, how long of a title reign are you seeing for these two?
Till at least the beginning of next year. I mean, you've had countless opportunities to establish a women's tag team division and you've dropped the ball each and every single time. So I would, yeah, at least till the beginning of next year, try to make us care. I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to do it, but hey, you can at least say that you tried. So, and I think these two would be a good setup for WrestleMania, maybe next year, kind of have them break up then. Cause I was kind of like, well, they could either start the split here or they could just regain these tag titles and just go on a run and just demolish everybody. I don't know how good that would look, but you're trying to put Jade over as a humongous deal. She's still kind of iffy in the ring. So like you just made that point, Bianca, it was very, very smart that she was the one that was under duress and Jade was the one making the hot tag.
Yeah. Justin, deep thoughts on the women's tag team division.
Missed the majority of it. Couldn't give two shits less about the women's tag titles. And I would say it's a constant reminder to me of what a waste it feels like for Bianca's prime to be spent this way, especially when you consider where the other women's world titles are. I wish they were doing more with her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the only purpose is for her to elevate Jade in the long run. That's the only reason to put her here and hope that Jade continues to learn from her. This is where it's unfortunate they don't have as many house shows as they used to, because for the most part, Jade's experience is all coming on television. And she's protected in the tag team situation, which is true, getting more experience or under her belt. But yeah, I mean, carrying it until the early next year is kind of a long haul, but I think it's probably the right move to Jesse's point. And then you start setting up something WrestleMania season between the two of them, do the split, have a big match, hopefully make Jade in the process and get Bianca back to where she belongs. You know, as someone who's headlined WrestleMania and had big singles matches a few times, she needs to get back in that division because she is always one of the most popular women on this roster for a reason. She's awesome. And being kind of vanquished to the tag division to help out a younger star, I understand why, but like, yeah, I'm with you, Justin. I'd like to see her get back to where she belongs long term. And, you know, they can try to elevate these tag team titles and hopefully they do. They need to bring up some fresh talent. They need to bring up some NXT people because I don't know who they're going to work with. You know, this has always been the problem, is there's just not the depth there to have women's tag titles. I think when they unveiled them, we were super skeptical at the time. Two women's titles, the tag titles. there's been people talking about a mid-card women's title. They do not have the talent depth for this. And so this is the problem. How do you keep them together long-term as the champions, dominant, but still have people to work with over and over and over? So there is a positive with the tag champs that they get to float brand to brand, and they can put these two out there, you know, on Raw, on SmackDown with the new television homes coming up, on NXT with the new television home coming up and everything, and Bianca being one of their top women stars. That makes some sense too. So yeah, all right, let's move on to the mix tag. This was one that actually, again, it exceeded my expectations. I think I put on our Facebook chat, like in the moment, I thought it followed the strap match, if I remember correctly. And I actually like got more into it than the strap match. I was like, man, I think that was actually a better match than the strap match. I think I graded them identical, but it was pretty damn good, I thought. I mean, I enjoyed it for the most part. Justin made the point earlier that, you know, the men didn't wrestle the women, although they did do the spot in the corner where Rhea finally got Dom in her clutches and put the scissor hold on him and all of that. But I mean, yeah, overall, I continue to be really impressed with Damian Priest and all of his work, his character work, turning babyface. Rhea is great. Always good to see her back. Liv is fine in the ring. She's not like one of the top workers or anything like that, but she's been good in this feud, I think. And then Dominic always has great heel heat. So I just thought overall it was a pretty fun match. Jesse, where you at in this one?
Yeah, overall, I was entertained. This is where I had to quickly use the restroom and got a little sidetracked. So I missed a handful of minutes here, but to the point, I mean, they're just delaying it a little bit for Rhea right now, where I think she'll either get the title back at Bad Blood or maybe the Survivor Series. It's definitely coming. I mean, she was able to overpower Dom within a minute. I mean, she's always had the look, she's had the upcomings, and then with her unfortunate injury, we had talked about her holding the championship for a couple of years. I mean, yeah, I think it's time for her to move forward. And Damian Priest, to your point as well, I was a little bit worried that the Judgment Day was going to interfere and steal this one as well. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, if Liv and Dom win again, then you can have Rhea and Damian just get even more pissed off and then just look out for more revenge and continue this for a little while longer. Or you do what you did last night. Perfect result. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah. To this point in the chat, the Canadian Destroyer off the steps on the outside that Liv hit to Rhea was awesome. Rhea kind of hit awkwardly against the ringside barrier on that. But it was very impressive. And then I thought, yeah, when all the Judgment Day started coming out and Priest eventually cleaning house on them, that was all pretty fun stuff. It looks like they're headed to Damian Priest and Finn Balor, maybe, at the next pay-per-view. Justin, you know, how do you feel about that?
Fine. Let's get it over with. You know, oddly enough, I'm much higher on Damian Priest now than I am Finn Balor. But again, Finn Balor's another one who's in that Jake Roberts zone where he's kind of done all he can do. They're not doing anything that really interests me with him. So let's just kind of get it over with. And I'm more about seeing what Damian's future holds. Other than that, I would just say I agree with everything you guys said about this match. It's the only match on the card that I would say exceeded my admittedly low expectations. And I would say the epitome of just a fun match.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So, yeah, I think this is one, you know, kind of worth going out of your way to watch if you missed the show. It's just overall a fun match. And that just leaves the main event with Randy Orton and Gunther for the World Heavyweight title. And, you know, Randy Orton, juiced to the gills, as Justin
Holy
would say,
shit.
Makes his entrance. Looking to surpass that record from the Iron Sheik at WrestleMania 17. Took forever to get to the ring. Jeremy and I were on that live stream doing the watch along for this. We started the stream when Randy was coming out. And I looked up at the counter and I was like, dude, we're almost 5 minutes in the stream. He is still making his entrance. Legitimately. It was so long. And then Gunther comes out. They do the big ring intros. From the time Randy started walking out, until the ring intros were over, it was about 10 minutes. It was insane how long this took. Now,
I will take that over 1,000 advertisements. So it's better than that.
True. True. Carl says 290 pounds of Randy Orton. Man, he's looking like he's pushing 300. This guy is huge right now, bigger than he's ever been in his career. He must be on that Dwayne Johnson regimen. You know, I wouldn't say my expectations were high going into this match, but Gunther's so good that I hoped it would be a really good match. Orton, a veteran, he never has. Justin, you've made this point on the show many times. If you think about Randy Orton matches, and the guy's been in the company for 20 years, there's not like a ton of matches where you'd be like, yeah, I want to go back and watch that one. There's a handful of them. He usually has solid matches, but his number of like high level matches are not as high as you would think. But I thought that probably Gunther could have one with him if they were really out to do so. And before I throw it to you, I'm not going to get into the spots or anything, but my initial review of this match was it underwhelmed me. I did not think it lived up. I saw some people very high on this match, and I was stunned because I thought it was pretty boring. Justin, throw it to you first.
Great crowd. I thought for a pretty boring match. To your point, I have not really been interested in any of Randy Orton's in-ring work since about 2005. He's kind of the epitome of your paint-by-color system guy, maybe a little too good for his own good when it comes to just in-ring awareness and everything feeling unnatural when you kind of want that fight feeling in a match, unpredictability a little bit. None of his matches have that. And I would say as far as this match goes, I still love Gunther. He rules. This was one of my least favorite of his matches he's had since coming to WWE. And I felt every single minute of that 34-minute match.
Couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. Jesse?
Yep. Orton is older. He's slower. A lot more miles on the tires these days. And Gunther, to me, has always worked better with guys that are like average size or a little smaller. So I think that could be just the contrast in styles wasn't there. He tried. They definitely tried for 34 minutes. There was some good amount of physicality. There was some solid limb work in there as well, I felt, but it just drug on forever. When your normal Gunther match is usually in the high teens, I think if you could have cut off at least, we'll say 12 minutes, so put it at 22, it would have been much more bearable, and we would have looked at this better.
Yeah. It was a great crowd, to Justin's point, but if I can, I want to take one shot at my ancestral homeland here in Germany.
Yes.
The wave?
Yes.
What are we doing?
Almost forgot about that stupid fucking wave.
Come on. We don't do the wave, you guys. Come on, Berlin. You're better than that. You're better than that. But
felt that they were better than that because he started joining along with them just saying, this is ridiculous.
Don't do the wave, you guys. Party foul. I did not like that. But overall, yeah, it was a great crowd for most of the night. I would actually want to compare the crowds to some of the other international shows they've done here in just a minute. But on the match itself, yeah, it was very slow, dragged on. There were sequences I liked. So I liked how Orton was working the right arm of Gunther. So, you know, he didn't want him to chop him. Makes perfect sense. So he's working the arm for the whole match. But then it's a little odd that they end with the sleeper. Because it's like, this guy has been working the arm the whole time. Shouldn't it be weakened? And, you know, he still wins with the sleeper. That said, the finishing sequence where Gunther, like, kept laying it on and then Randy would fight out. And then there was the one point where he broke up the sleeper and they had a great camera shot where then Gunther chopped him in the back and, like, the sweat went everywhere.
That was good.
That was super cool. Yeah, I liked that. And then, you know, then he breaks it again. And then Gunther kind of did the Undertaker thing where he just sat up really fast and locked it in again. And then that's where it ended. And then he put him out. One criticism, I don't like the one arm drop. You got to do it three times. When did we get to this thing where they only dropped the arm once?
I don't mind the one arm drop. I think people's complaints about it are valid just because that's how we grew up on it. Mm-hmm. And that can add some drama. But to me, it's a little bit more realistic this way than all of a sudden you're arm dropping two times, and then all of a sudden you have the strength to continue.
I just like it, you know, thinking back to how many times did you wrestle with like your dad or your friends, and like they put you in the sleeper and you always do the 1-2 and then you fight back. I just like that. It's a traditional wrestling.
Amen.
I don't know what made them switch, but yeah, so they did that finish, you know, predictable finish with Gunther getting the finish or getting the win here. Now, how do you guys think this crowd compared to like what we've seen in France, what we've seen from the UK? Is it technically international? Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. I mean, it's outside of the mainland. Puerto Rico in you know, with Backlash. How did you think Germany compared to some of those other markets, Jesse?
Right in that, well, right along with them, I felt, because I'm thinking back, because France was pretty loud.
Yeah. Yeah.
France was definitely louder than Germany was. Puerto Rico blew everybody away. Unreal crowd there. Scotland, it's probably on par with Scotland, but I think the one thing we can agree is that all those international markets just destroy United States crowds. SummerSlam it almost sounded like a church event as opposed to a lot of these PLEs.
Yeah. Yeah. Justin?
Very bottom. I think all the other crowds were also loud. You know, I'm not going to say Berlin was not as loud as them, but it seemed like they were almost loud for the sake of being loud. You know, to your point with the wave, it's like they weren't being allowed for what was happening in the ring, which is what I think you can say about like the France crowd and the Puerto Rican crowd, is they were invested into what was, you know, the action that was going on. And I just didn't feel that with Berlin.
Yeah. I mean, some of this, to the point, I agree they're all better than the U.S. crowds for the most part. There's a couple markets in the U.S. that are always above and beyond, like Chicago, New York, usually. I mean, I throw Philly in there sometimes too, but we have the overexposure thing. Like we see the shows all the time. So when they go international, it's more of a rarity. So it's easier to kind of bring your A game when you're only getting the occasional shows. I will say though, that I hope it gets the general or most of the American crowds to elevate their game a little bit, you know, the Green Bay, Wisconsin's, the Des Moines, Iowa's, you know, let's up our game here a little bit. I think Puerto Rico is still my favorite. Yeah. And something about that show was just really, really special. But I wanted to put a tweet here on the screen that I found amusing, because they announced that this was the highest grossing arena show that they've ever done, which obviously it wasn't their most attended arena show. So it tells you they charge more for tickets on this one. And this tweet I thought was very funny, where it said, they quote tweeted the record announcement. And he said, getting fans to cheer for paying higher ticket prices than anyone else is masterclass level stuff.
Yeah.
This was Josh Nason from the Observer. Yeah, that was, no kidding. Yeah, we set the all-time game record. Charge us more, baby. We love it. That was funny. Good stuff.
Is that a sign of how that economy is going over there? I'm not familiar with what's going on in Germany these days.
Yeah, I don't know, man. But yeah, good crowd, though, overall. Pretty fun show. Nothing 4 stars or above for me. No match of the year contender, certainly. So a few moments here and there. I think consistency is basically the word for this show. Nothing egregiously bad, nothing overly great, just all kind of right there in the middle, average, slightly above average. That's kind of what I thought of the show. You guys have any closing thoughts on it?
I think you summed it up pretty well. Not offensive and ultimately not all that memorable either.
Yeah.
With you there, and I'm going to look offline as well if this was the last time that WWE was in Germany for a television event. Was it the Owen Bulldog European title match? Because I watched about 2.5 minutes of clips on Twitter yesterday of the Owen Bulldog match, and because Ryan raves about it all the time and made me want to go back and watch that.
Love that match. I'm pretty sure that was the last, because they said 97, right? It was their first TV since 97. I'm pretty sure it was that one. Yeah.
Didn't that make sense?
Yeah. Been a long time. We'll be talking about Brett and Owen this week. If you guys want to get in on that show, become a patron. Patreon.com/Top Rope Nation. Reviewing SummerSlam 94. In fact, you guys can't see it, but on the wall behind my camera, you used to be able to see in our streams when I had the old setup. I've got the program from that show signed by Bret Hart staring me in the face right now. I am really, really looking forward to breaking down SummerSlam 94 with these guys. Sign up to become a patron. You can join us live Tuesday night, or then patrons can also get the podcast version after the fact. I believe it will be our 160th bonus show on Patreon. So like I said at the top, never a better time to sign up, support the show, get that bonus content here as we move into the fall. Guys, that's about all I had on this one. I'm going to be smoking some ribs here. I'm trying to level up my game today to try to reach Justin Joint's elite level status when it comes to making ribs. I may be halfway there, but that's what I'll be doing today. Justin, you got any plans?
I just try and corral these wild men that I hear stomping and screaming from upstairs.
Yeah. Jesse, you?
I could hear them once. Justin, oh, man. You were looking up, and yeah. I could see the look on your face.
I got to get going here, guys.
Yeah. No, I, like I said, stay fair tomorrow. Other than that, I'm going to deep clean the living heck out of this apartment before little man comes back and terrorizes it midweek.
Nice, nice. I think I might be going to a theme park tomorrow. Justin, my sister and nephews are coming to town. So we might, I think it's the last day of the year it's open. And so they've never been, so we might be taking them. So that's what I got tomorrow. Ribs today, probably a few beers along the way. So guys, yeah, this has been fun. Appreciate it. Justin's on his way out the door. So this has been episode 356 of Top Rope Nation. We will see you guys later. Have a great rest of your Labor Day weekend. Take care, everybody.
Peace.
Make no mistake, Trump-backed Bernie Moreno was a MAGA mistake for black families in Ohio.
We're not going to replace racism in this country from decades ago with a new form of racism, which is what DEI is.
If Bernie Moreno is elected senator, he will support the MAGA playbook and implement the thinly disguised racist Project 2025 agenda. That means ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that exist to correct the impacts of racism. MAGA extremists like Moreno believe programs that have helped our families are entitlement programs, but they have no problem giving their buddies a boost by passing more tax giveaways for rich folks like themselves. Black Americans like me have worked hard and persevered in fighting for a fair shot. We've come too far to let self-serving extremists like Bernie Moreno take us back. That's why we must re-elect Senator Sherrod Brown. He has fought for equal opportunity for black families and will continue to do so. Go to OhioVoterGuide.org and register by October 7th. Paid for by WinSenate, which is responsible for the content of this ad. WinSenate.org, not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.